All right, well, this is Tom Denny, and this is Esoteric Origins, and I have the great pleasure to be talking with Freeman today, who is, I guess you would call yourself an occult researcher and provider.
Or a conspiracy theorist.
Conspiracy theorist, or,
extraordinaire.
Yeah, you know, the term conspiracy theorist has such a negative connotation. It's so, you know, brainwashed into people that anything conspiracy theorist should be dismissed.
I'm so close to Mel Gibson, it's crazy.
Well, you know, but on the other hand, there's the coincidence theorist, that all of these things are simply coincidence. You know, that is more plausible for dismissal than the actual reality behind some of the things that you present in your research. One thing I'd like to say is I first discovered you about 5 years ago. With your chemtrails video where you're wearing the gas mask.
Right.
Oh my gosh, and I just wanted to commend you on how far you've come in that time as far as your production and your presentation and your personal ability to tell a story has just phenomenally increased, and so congratulations on that. You've come so far.
And, yeah, 5 years of practice, right?
I guess so. And you know, when I first saw that chemtrail video, I was like, "Who is this kook? And what is he talking about?" And but what really got me was when you started to talk about the government and you know, the mysterious creatures that they might be worshiping, and I was like, "Whoa!" And then when I started to look at the sky, I had all of those feelings of no, oh no, it can't be. And then you know, the whole anger and resentment and, you know, all those feelings flooded in, and now it's just so, you know, part of everyday life that, oh, here they are, they're spraying again, you know, filling the skies, and you try to point them out to people, and they don't want to hear. They get that same reaction that I first had to your presentation, you know, 5 years ago, which is anger, you know, they can't imagine that, you know, one more thing to deal with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I like to keep pushing those boundaries.
And you do, and what's crazy is that everything that you present either comes to fruition, or I'm like, no, can't be, really? Yeah. And like, I'll go look it up, and sure enough, it's always, you know, Alex Jones, when you look up his stuff, you're like, oh, okay, the numbers were off, or, you know, the data was skewed, but man, your research is frighteningly... I don't know how else to put it, but...
On target. Yeah, it blows my mind, I'll tell you that much. I'm blown away as these things unfold before me. It's just too much, and then to have it really come to life. And, you know, you're talking about Barack Obama being a clone of an ancient pharaoh, and then Barack comes out and says, well, I'm not going to allow human cloning for reproduction, you know, therefore allowing human cloning for experimentation. And then they come out and say, oh, yeah, we did actually have Akhenaten's DNA the whole time. Sorry, we lied to you. It was national security. Yeah, like, how does this happen? It's too much. You know, the Secret Service naming them Renegade, Renaissance, Rosebud, and Radiance. I mean, it's unfathomable how the story is just there, if you know it.
Well, and not just that. The way he's done a complete 180 on all of his campaign processes and not promises, and also he's being smug about it. He's being arrogant and, oh, well, if you don't like it, you could just, you know, when McCain the other day challenged him on one of his new bill proposals and how it was in complete contradiction to his campaign processes, he was just like, well, John, last I saw, we're not, you know, campaigning anymore, and you lost. And that's kind of like the general, you know, it's just a smugness.
Yeah, that's the psychological warfare going on. When people recognize that so many people are caught up in internal politics, when the elite themselves are dealing with global conditioning, you know, we won't even call it politics, we're in global conditioning, and they want certain activities to take place. And so they use every aspect of what they've got, the media, the news, the internet, everything comes at you. I mean, on January 1st, 2000, AOL's poll was, would you take a national ID card? It's programming. But when you start to break away from the national programming, as you mentioned, Alex Jones, and he sticks with the national constitution and dealing with a police state, dealing with saving the republic. Well, then you're ignoring the global scheme of what's going on. And so this is where people are missing the big picture, because what they need right now is for America to be hated. We are to be hated because we're a nation of liberty and freedom, you know, is our motto. And if they can then bring about this satanic force, which is us, the American public, by using Lady Gaga, Eminem, you name it, all the television that we see, CSI, I mean, it's Satan, Satan, Satan from one end to the next. It's
sex,
violence, it's trauma-based mind
death.
Control.
Yeah.
And so they need us to be Satan. And so then Barack Obama is doing his role. That's why he's shunted Gordon Brown. They gave him this priceless pen box made out of an ancient artifact boat used in slavery, covered in jade, you know, one of a kind. And Barack sent him back 25 DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
When Gordon came over to America, Barack said, "Nah, I'm not going to talk to him." When Barack went to Norway, he shunned the king of Norway. And this is all to just incite the hatred of America. And so we play our part by being the stupid, arrogant little American brats. And he plays his part by being this snobbish, cheap, as the Obamas are telling you, "Oh, you can't plant organic gardens," they put one in the front of the White House, which then ended up being totally covered in lead and crap. But do you see what I'm saying? That you have to see the global scheme instead of just the internal politics.
And most people, they don't even look at what is going outside their own city or their own state. So they just keep glued to the whatever CNN tells them to think about and believe in.
Exactly.
So,
and meanwhile, all the while fulfilling the dream of the overlords.
The dream of the overlords. Now, this has been a long-standing dream, and maybe we could talk about how looking back at the past can help us understand what is going on now and why are our rulers or presidents and officials using these same symbols, which we see all the way back to Roman Empire days and before, long before, even to the Phoenicians and Egyptians.
Absolutely. Egyptianization is going strong. I mean, pyramids built everywhere, Paris, Memphis, you name it, there's a pyramid, Astana.
And not many people even know that Memphis is an Egyptian term or idea, and even Philadelphia, and a lot of the research that Jordan Maxwell has presented, people just don't even know, and they don't care.
Right. And so if we do track back, and this is the mystery that's been unfolding for us, for our generation, right? We were introduced to the concept of extraterrestrial, quote-unquote, gods in our past in some sort of intervention theory or even perhaps a creation theory.
Mm.
I'm more with the intervention than the creation theory. But when we look at the ancient past, we're lost because we see things that make no sense to us. How many books will you find on the Great Pyramid of Egypt? How many theories are there as to how and why it was built? But yet no one knows.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have these pyramids all over the planet that defy our architectural abilities in the 21st century. Baalbek, Lebanon has 800-ton stones. We couldn't even consider moving that. And it was moved miles, 100 miles from the quarry to the building. And then we're looking at structures in ancient Mexico and Peru. I think it's Chichen Itza that has a large slate of mica under the flooring, under the rock. So here's something that we couldn't move because mica is what your motherboard is made out of. It's, in computer parts. And it's a very fragile thing. And when you try to move it, it chips, it breaks, it does all this. But yet, the only place that the ancient Aztecs, Mayans, or Olmecs, whoever might have built this structure, because we're lost in these histories, were able to move this hundreds of miles over to their temple and then put it under the rocks, under the flooring, so it's not even visible. It wasn't artistic. And so we have to start questioning what was going on. And when you realize that the only thing that we apply this much speciality and intricacy to is engineering. You know, you have to make an engine, a combustible engine, to work. You know what I mean? You have to have the right piston size to go with the right shaft. You have to have the right motions with, and we have to build these precision.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take that idea and you bring it back to the ancient past, and you see that the pyramids are aligned northeast, south, and west to a precision that we could not and would not even bother with today,
yeah,
in building, then you realize that it's not a building. It's a machine. It's an engineered device that serves a purpose. Now we got to, you know, figure out what that purpose is, of course.
Well, it was in one of David Wilcock's recent lectures, there were two pyramids, and I do believe it was, the country was somewhere near Russia, we'll say, but they blew up one of these pyramids because they thought they were just two triangular-shaped mountains that have been there since antiquity. And so one, they decided to quarry. They needed some stones. So as soon as they blew up this one pyramid, the whole climate of that region changed. It turned from summer, you know, beautiful weather, to all of a sudden gray storms all every day. And it took about 8 months for it to calm down after these, what apparently are, you know, weather generators or some sort of torsion generators that, you know, who knows, create some sort of living energy field for the local inhabitants.
And this would be very much the same ideas and the purpose for the Great Pyramids being in the most central mass location of land on planet Earth. And then also we take into a concept that's just coming out to our understanding, which is paramagnetics. Now, the idea and the study of magnetics is a major thrust in our understanding of the occult and in understanding the universe. And when you start to realize, like, when you look at magic, now, magic comes from Egypt, as far as we can track it back. You know, you had the ancient Egyptian magi dueling with Moses in Exodus. So when you look at the word magic, you see magnet, magus, magi. You have every ending, and is really the premise of magnetism and electromagnetism. So now we start to look around the world, and we realize, okay, look, now the Rome, the Vatican, that really is spawned of Egypt. If you take it all the way back, you'll see that they scraped off the Egyptian gods on the temple and just put the saints in their place.
Mm-hmm.
The Roman Empire is the Egyptian Empire. That's why they have the large obelisk sitting out in front, and all the connections there in monotheism and getting back to Akhenaten. But
what we see is
the Vatican has joined forces with CERN, and they've sent their Jesuit priest astronomer, Benjamin Funes, along with another Vatican physicist, Gabriel Gionti. And these two now have coupled up with CERN, which of course is a giant magnet,
mm-hmm,
and colliding particles together to look for this quote-unquote God particle, or the Higgs boson.
Mm.
They have also then coupled CERN with the International Space Station, or the ISS, and put the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer up there to look for dark matter. So when we realize that the Vatican is high-tech, they have the new Lucifer telescope over in Arizona. That one just cracks me up to no end.
Yeah, very interesting.
You've heard of this?
I only heard that they were trying to get that particular area because it was sacred to the Indians. And so, again, in, you know, the 21st century, they were raising the, these savages are trying to prevent science, when really it was, they were trying to protect their sacred ground for, you know, it was probably those same electromagnetic energies
Well, that's the perfect spot to watch the sun, which is the critical ingredient that everyone is working towards right now. You know, they sent the Solar Dynamic Observatory up into space. They've got now the VAT, the one I was talking about in Arizona, the Vatican. But, you know, realize that what I'm saying is that their telescope is called Lucifer, and it's the Vatican.
Mm.
Are you getting that? And yeah. I mean, they really had to work hard to make the word Lucifer. It stands for the Large Binocular Telescope Near Infrared Utility with Camera and Integral Field Unit for Extragalactic Research.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Now.
And this is all on the internet?
Sure. Go to Space War News, FreemanTV.com. I keep up on all of this. You know, just last Friday we had two major space war launches. Now this is what I'm watching, because when you understand the ancient past, when you realize that there is technology involved in the ancient past that's far and above and beyond what we understand, then you realize what these guys are thinking today and how these play into that integral role of the ancient past. So it seems that when people introduce the idea of these gods from outer space, that they seem to just fall out of the picture, right? They came here, they created mankind, civilization, and vanished. You know, no worries.
Mm-hmm.
No. If this theory be true, and honestly, that's the hypothesis I run on, and so far, as you can tell, I haven't been wrong. I'm running on this ancient astronaut hypothesis, the ancient technological advanced civilization of the past, and projecting it to the future and projecting it for now. And I'm coming up with the right answers, you know. And it really just blows my mind. So it's when you start to take in that idea, and then you look at what's going on today, you know, like I was saying, the connections with magnets, and I was getting to paramagnetism, and the stations and places of these devices we call pyramids, you know, and realize what I'm saying about the mica under the rocks there, that's a computer, right? And then they're all connected with gold and water and subterranean gases. Same thing in your computer. Your computer is subterranean technology, which also brings up very interesting questions.
Of why Macintosh uses the Apple and
well, then the satanic connections. My God, I mean, the Vatican putting a Lucifer telescope up, our president's phrase, yes, we can, played backwards, means thank you, Satan. His name, Barack Obama, is lightning from heaven, which is the description of Satan in the Bible. He rides around in the beast. Fox. The fox is the only word you can get in English out of 666.
So the evidence is all around. Let me ask you, do you think that it is like Manly P. Hall calls the seething light of Lucifer, just this, you know, really esoteric phrase for some sort of science that we're not understanding? Or do you think they're actually involved in some sort of demon worship, whether that's, you know, pan-dimensional reptilian beings or the actual, you know, negativity incarnate that we think of the legend of, you know, Satan and all these, you know, demons who are controlling the world and getting our leaders to, you know, suck our power and our getting our musicians to, you know, get us corrupted through sex and drugs and rock and roll, while our politicians are running around destroying the world with major corporations?
Both.
You think it's both?
I really do. You know, I talked with Rex Church, the high priest of the Church of Satan, and he's a generational Satanist. And his whole concept was to build a device he calls the Ragnarok Engine. And he's planning on launching this December 21st, 2012. And his device is to open a portal for the old ones to enter. So this is like Hellboy.
Mm.
And so when you couple this with the Vatican, the fact that CERN's logo is 666, they're trying to punch a hole into the other dimension, they're saying something might break through. I mean, the scientist at CERN said that something may come through the door they open. When you couple that with the Lucifer telescope and, you know, all these crazy connections going on, then you see both. You see this technologically advanced Satanism.
Huh.
And that's really where it's at, and that's what people don't understand about our world. When we look to the military-industrial complex, we are looking at an occult order. When you talk about Hitler's Nazis, you're not talking about a military. You're talking about an occult order with a belief system and an idealism. And so if you start to track and understand their idealism and what they do, okay, so what we're talking about, now let's just make it today, 90% of the people in charge of things around the globe go into darkened lodges, Freemasonic lodges all around the world, and perform death and resurrection rituals.
Mm-hmm.
They perform what's known as ceremonial magic.
Mm.
And when you ask the question, well, why? You know, a lot of Masons will tell you, yeah, we go to the lodge and we sleep. Oh my God, those, you know, the rituals are so boring.
Right.
Because they're not asking the questions. You know, what is the esoteric significance of this? What is magic? Why am I doing it? My father was worshipful master. He was the man wearing the top hat and the white gloves and the big eye on his apron, and with his gavel in hand, punching holes in people's heads in the Hiram Abiff ritual. He would say it was all gobbledygook that he had to memorize.
Mm.
But when you open your eyes and you start to look and you see that what we're talking about here is ceremonial magic. When you ask the Masons themselves, you go to the top, you go to Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma. Over 70 times in that book he says Freemasonry is Kabbalism.
Right.
You can check all the 33s and you'll find them all stating that Freemasonry is a religion. As many as the Brethren would, you know, deny this over and over, even though they, you know, call prayers in the lodge and think, so who are you praying to?
Yeah.
Now, when you're raised in this degree, when you're a master mason after the third degree, you're buried in the rubble pile with the rubbish and the three ruffians are taken away, you are then raised to the light and you're put to the five points of fellowship, which is a way of putting your foot to foot, knee to knee, chest to chest, hand to back. And you whispered the secret master word, which no one knows honestly what it means, the word Mahabon. And then you're told to look to the pentagram in the back of the lodge and know that this is Venus, the light. Well, you look Venus up or Lucifer up in the dictionary, and the very first definition is Venus. So Lucifer is Venus, so now you're brought up to the light of Lucifer.
So why Venus?
But the ceremonial magic, the purpose and point of all of that is invocation or evocation of entities. So that's either you want an entity inside of you, a god form, or you want an entity to appear before you that you can control. And that is the purpose of ceremonial magic. And so when you realize the real true foundations of this lodge, which most of the people participating don't, right? They don't read this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would say 98% of the Masons never read Morals and Dogma. I've read it, you know, cover to cover. I found it fascinating.
So, yes, they are bringing these entities into themselves and getting directions and taking orders that seem to be applied to the rest of us. These are our leaders.
Yeah. Only because we give our free will. We give our free will agreement.
Because we don't
the first
want the responsibility.
Well, yeah, that's the first statement of entering a lodge, of a Freemasonic lodge, is that you come of your own free will and accord. And this is tantamount of everything. This is the explanation of all. Because when we give our free will agreement by watching a movie and saying, oh, that was cool, you know, and all the death and destruction, by the concepts that are sent to us, and then we agree with them, we don't deter ourselves as we watch everything burn. We give our free will agreement, and this is the critical soul factor that the sorcerers, now I identify these guys as sorcerers, because there's a separation between magic and sorcery. Magic, you know, could be art. Magic is a classification of human ability. It's the use of the soul powers, you know, contact with your holy guardian angel. But sorcery is the use of these arcane knowledge to ego ends, to try and bring about your own selfish, greedy ends. And so I call these sorcerers to separate these two concepts. Because you find when you start talking about the fact that your leaders are all into the occult, that all of a sudden everybody freaks out and they want to either go hang them or, you know, do whatever, burn them at the stake. And it's like, no more fanaticism, please. Just understand the concepts, because magic shouldn't be considered evil. It should be understood, and it should be our new high science. It's spiritual science.
Well, it seems to be becoming that way, as our quantum physicists and people who work at CERN are, after researching, you know, what is reality, they're starting to come back with these, with more questions and spiritual answers. They seem to be becoming sort of like gurus and telling us, yes, the reality is what you believe it is. And
right.
I don't know. I just find it very, very bizarre what our top quantum physicists like Ananda Bozeman and Greg Braden are returning.
The Tao of physics, you know, right there. Just I would recommend that book to anyone, The Tao of Physics, Fritz Capra. Great stuff. Yeah, it's true. And that's, yeah, our science is proving our spiritualism.
Okay, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, and everywhere you look around the world, it seems that the ancients had a stronger grasp on this understanding than we did, that there was a lost civilization that we are just now returning to.
Yes, and you can imagine what would happen if there were such a thing as the major crustal shift, which has been talked about throughout time. Even in the Bible and in ancient Mayans tales, they talk of the day that lasted 3 days and the night that lasted three days.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And so if such a thing were to occur, now this is one of our current fears, is we're watching the magnetosphere deplete, we're watching the sun freak out, we have the second sun that seems to be hurling towards us that NASA is calling Nemesis. It most likely is this G1.9, if you want to check it out. It looks just like the Firefox logo. Everyone's getting their telescopes, their solar observatories up. They're all trying to watch and also get into this dark matter. It's very critical at this point. And as we watch, we're realizing that our planet is entering... realize that we're cycling around a center as well, which most believe is a black hole. So we're moving into new space all the time. And so if you have been around long enough to see a 236,000-year cycle, then you would know what was coming. And so when we look at these ancient buildings of the past, too, the other major feature of them is watching astronomical data. They're watching long time.
So let's talk about when you went to South America and you were with Melchizedek, right?
Well, he was there, but I believe he was in a cave somewhere. I didn't know he was there until I returned.
Oh, okay. So you weren't part of the whole cave-dwelling Return of the Elders thing?
No, I was performing the first ever all-night ritual at the fire pit at the Pyramids of Tikal, which they showed in the movie 2012 and had everyone committing suicide, right? Mm-hmm. So I felt like they killed me twice in that movie. I mean, one, I'm a little bit like Woody Harrelson's character, and then the other, I was at that fire pit they were showing everyone dead at with a group of international travelers. Now, the Mayans had predicted that a tribe of nations would gather and that they would perform for the very first time since the pyramids have been rediscovered, an all-night ritual at the Pyramid of Tikal. This is the Jaguar and the Moon pyramids. And we had to battle, or they had to battle. We went through quite a battle just to get there. I'll tell you, chicken buses and shuttles and everything else with the whole Mayan tribe and our marimba band. I myself got Montezuma's revenge. I was hurling out the window of the bus for 14 hours till we got there, and then they gave me some crazy brown juice, which healed me, and I was able to get up and film the ritual. So I have all that footage, and I did put part of it on the Melchizedek site, but I am still working on that film. But it was an amazing event, and as they battled to try to get to the pyramid at night, the government was not going to allow it after they had already said they would. Two of these Mayan Tatas, or what their shamans are called, were Freemasons themselves. And these two, actually, one a doctor and the other, I don't know what he did, they were on their phones the moment the government shut us down. And next thing you know, we're given the go-ahead. But then we're shut down again. Said, no, no. And, I mean, there's a man with a shotgun at the gate not letting us through, right? Mm-hmm. And so the next thing they know, and I didn't even get time to charge my camera or anything like that, and all of a sudden it was, go, go, go. And we all just busted the barrier. And, here I'm the guy with the shotgun stops. But I don't speak a lick of Spanish, so I'm just like, no habla español, and I just kept following the crowd, hoping he didn't shoot me in the back,
Right.
But we made it, and we carried all the gear up there, and we did this full ritual. But the next morning, okay, so the ritual went all night long, a ceremony, I would say. And we all gave incense to the fire. And the Mayans had said the more that humans would do this, show their signs of gratitude through ceremony, the more we could salvage the planet. They're expecting a major... They said the next people visiting those pyramids would be the fish. And I think with this Guatemalan volcano erupting, and, you know, of course, Iceland and, you know, it's like Haiti, Chile, and everything else, then we can start to think that maybe they were right. But what happened was the next morning, the sun did not rise. Here we are at the winter solstice solar ceremony, and the sun did not rise. It was a complete fog covering the whole area. We couldn't see the sun until it was about 1 in the afternoon, and it was still just a bland yellow disk off in the smoke. And this was very foreboding to the Mayans. And all around the Atalan, the bottomless lake there and the volcanoes, they're selling their property to the gringos like crazy. They're getting out. And they're moving up, strangely, to North Guatemala, where the volcano just hit, where they have some sacred lands that have never been touched by tourist feet. And this is the story that we're in, you know, us in our lives, and we're all thinking about economy and this, that, and the other, and when really there's some serious changes coming.
Yeah, there's so many distractions that it's hard. Personally, I've taken up just a kind of like a daily meditation where I just, you know, and this was actually recommended to me from a Gnostic mystic. But every morning I wake up and I just feel the energy, you know, of the sun coming in, and then I just feel the energy going through and connecting to the earth, and I kind of have a little conversation with the sun and the earth and just realize, you know, that the sun's way out there in space and I'm here on earth floating in space.
That's what you gotta do, yeah.
Yeah, and it puts things into perspective, and then all of a sudden you get like a bill for a credit card, and oh, if you don't pay this, you're gonna be in trouble, and you're like, wait a minute, I'm floating in space. What are you talking about? You know, so I do agree that something about the ritual definitely takes you out of, I guess what Robert Anton Wilson called the hive mind, or the just the general hive of everybody running around.
So therein lies another critical ingredient to the agenda, the creation of this atheism. Now, many people would say flat out that Freemasonry simply creates atheism, and that's their only purpose, is what some think. I think it's a little more than that. But spiritualism, and even religion, is so necessary to the human soul, it should not be ignored. Neither should books that have lasted 5,000 years. And so we are all being conditioned to think this is all just silly poppycock. Honestly, I was not raised with a religion whatsoever. My family were, you know, pretty much atheists. And, of course, Freemasons and Eastern Star. My life has shown me that there is a spiritual force in action on planet Earth that anyone can attach themselves to, and it's a loving, nurturing, divine guidance that just brings about synchronistic events that leads you from one event to the next and fulfills your soul's purpose. And in order to do that, you got to detach from all these expectations that have been placed into your head of what you've got to do, and I often suggest a pilgrimage. Go walk across the United States and see what happens. And if you have the faith, now that's the thing, though, you got to have the faith. And if you do, then everything will work out. If you don't have faith, if you have expectations of fear, if you have expectations of any sort, really, then you'll deny yourself all the possibilities that come your way, because you're going to say, well, no, I shouldn't go there, or I won't do that, when you don't know what life has to offer. And we all think we do. We all think we got it all figured out. And, you know, I'm going to do step A, step B, step C. When you allow the holographic universe to open up, all of a sudden you're doing things that you never believed even possible for your own self and in your life.
And sometimes that synchronicity can lead you on a path that at first seems terrifying and scary, and you want to back out at the last second and jump out, but you have to stay on the ride to see it through. And sometimes there's a golden, you know, sunrise at the end of it. But
there usually is, and it seems that at our psychological point right now, that we have to have some sort of anxiety to bring about the synchronistic. Eventually, you get above and beyond needing the anxiety. But at first, you'll get to a point where you're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then something will fall from heaven. I mean, I've literally had a phone ring in a house that I was visiting with a girl calling to say that she needed someone to ride with her to where I needed to go. okay, I'm in a random house, a random person calling, wanting to take me where I need to go. And this is the type of thing, so at first there's the fear. There's like, oh my God, I'm trapped. I'm hanging out here. I'm in some state. I don't even know where. And I have nothing and nowhere to go. Everyone I know is leaving in different directions. And boom, a miracle happens.
Wow.
And so often it does at first start with these anxiety moments, and that's where you recognize the miracle. You're like, oh my God, how could that have happened? And when this happens over and over and over again, eventually you just let go of the fear and you just follow the synchronistic occurrence.
And just take the ride.
Yeah, exactly. Ride the wave.
So, and part of our ancient tradition was that everyone lived like that. Before money, before, you know, banks, people just lived in the moment, in their own abundance. And it seems that they're, that especially today, we've got these two forces battling it out with, you know, our faith aspect and this seemingly demonic aspect that's keeping us grounded here in the, you know, and, oh, you know, are you going to get laid? Are you getting laid? Everybody's worried about if they're getting laid. And you know, what are their buddies going to think if they don't get laid? And your buddies start to get worried. I haven't seen you getting laid for a while. You know, it's like, that's like paramount. Or and then next to that, it's getting drunk. Oh, you haven't been drunk in how many weeks? Oh, my God,
yeah.
We got to get you wasted right away. It's like an emergency. And that's everybody's, you know, that's the big deal. And I think that's part of, it's hard to break away from that because it's easy to fall in like, oh my God, I haven't been laid in so long. I'll probably never get laid again. And like, that's the end of the world for you. So we've got these two weird forces battling each other. It seems like, well, in fact, didn't you even say that it seems like the gods are battling for ownership of us?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Honestly, money was one of the critical ingredients to this, and the Templars giving you paper notes for gold, as if gold had any value other than technologically. But money, the whole concept of it, it separated you from your God self. It separated you from your gratitude, and it created the ego. Because now you had the power, this magical spell. You could throw this pentacle at whatever you need and have it. And so then there's no more gratitude. You earned it. You deserve it. And all of these things are false gods. And really, you know, it creates false gods because we have people that are rich and therefore we think that they're good.
Mm.
You know, it's crazy.
But
money itself just took away the natural gratitude of existence and having things divinely inspired and miraculously evolved. And that's why I suggest the pilgrimage, because then you see and you regain your gratitude. And that's what the Mayans were saying. If we could just remember the gratitude in whatever form, it doesn't necessarily have to be burning a fire at a pyramid. In any form, you're thanking the universe for existence and for what you are gaining. And you don't feel this superiority that money suggests, that says that you're above and beyond and in control. And that's really where the fate lost, and that's where we're at. So now we're at a point where we're trying to tell people money's evil, but yet still have to ask for donations on our radio shows, right? And there's no altruism when it comes to it, because the only way for money to disappear is with everyone's agreement. And then they can only see two sides of this, either money or barter. And barter is a far worse form of control than money, I tell you this straight out. But no one sees the share or holographic or just miraculous abundance that is abound. And that is why the Mayans had so many different calendars, because their belief systems were in the miraculous synchronistic realms.
And you seem to keep pointing out this inevitable crash, this 3 days of darkness in which, you know, everything's just going to return to some sort of archaic, you know, form of where we just have to help each other out and there's going to be, you know, no lights. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, we are in the age of catastrophe. There's no doubt about that. Mine started back in 5/5/2000 with the planetary alignment and Gordon Michael Scallion, who is creating the maps of what the world would look like after a crestal shift. You know, I remember exactly where I was on 5/5/2000, and I was watching the SOHO satellite as the planets align behind the sun, just waiting. Now, we're rotating at 1,100 miles an hour. If this were to even be hiccuped, to, or even just slowed, we'd all still be traveling at 1,100 miles an hour. And I actually had a vision of this, strange. And what I really realized is that it would appear as if the tree hit you or the wall hit you, because everything that's not bolted down will continue traveling at 1,100 miles an hour, but the tree will be stopping. You know, say it's going 600 miles an hour. You're then traveling at 500 miles an hour at that tree, or from your perspective, the tree's coming at you. So we're in this age of catastrophism. We're getting bombarded with it by the media. Of course, all of the different movies of Impact, Deep mm-hmm. Impact, 2012, War of the Worlds, and what else, the Day the Earth Stood Still, endless ideas. Now, you know, consider as well that they were telecasting the Day the Earth Stood Still to Ursa Major, I think yeah. it was, or Alpha Centauri, the Dorito commercial went to Ursa Major. Then we're looking at just, you know, the programming of it. Now we want to ask the question, is the universe mental? When you start to see the ancient esoteric books of the Rosicrucians, they come with the concept that the universe is mental. So if you program everyone to an end-of-the-world script, then will we create it? You know, will we call asteroids down with our own consciousness? Will we cause a crustal shift with our own thoughts? The Mayans think so. That's why they're telling us to get our heads straight. And the universe and the secret brotherhoods, the Rosicrucians especially, speak of the universe being mental. And so we have all these things, but then the science has to make it real. So now NASA comes with their Nemesis program, which was simply a thought game. They said, okay, well, there seems to be some strange stuff going on out here. Probably, maybe, it could be another sun. They had no evidence of it, really, though. It was just a thought game. But now they've brought it out to the public as if it were something they were really believing. And on top of that, then we have other scientists saying, yes, there is a second sun in our solar system. It's G1.9, and it's hurtling towards us at this moment. Now, we find most of our solar systems do have binary stars, you know, Sirius and others, that it's common. So we watch as well as the government is preparing. They're building giant oversized airports in Denver with Kevlar roofing, and they've got a giant seed vault in Norway, and they're building deep underground military bases out of control. And, you know, all these stories of the Ark 2 and different things that you would see in 2012, these survival mechanisms for the elite. And another thing that I'm working on right now and understanding is the mind transferring technology. So now we have telepresence robots going up to the International Space Station. And the idea of transmitting your soul or your mind into that robot is a very interesting, intriguing one. One such project is the Blue Brain Project, and Henry Markow, I think, is his name. And
now everyone can wrap their heads around it because they've been introduced to the concept through Avatar.
That's true, and Surrogate as well. Surrogates with Bruce Willis is exactly this concept. And well, so then we watch as they're building deep space antenna arrays. So NASA's putting up a new deep space beam waveguide antenna in Australia. And the ISCAT in Norway sent a Doritos commercial via radio frequency waves off to Ursa Major. You know, when you start to look at them, almost like they're getting ready to jump ship. But just their souls, just their consciousness. Yeah, I don't know what'll be on the receiving end. Perhaps they are cloning and sending other beings out there. So we're in crazy times right now. You know, everything I say to you right now is you know, scientifically backed. And so we're actually given this escape. If all this be true, then we're free. Then we don't have to worry about getting a college education. You don't have to worry about what your career is going to be. Money's gone. You know, one way or another, they're working on the new ACK metal or one world currency. They're building a 21st century capitals all around the globe that aren't related to nations. And so all the plans that we have and all of our expectations for the future are gone. And of course, like you said, that causes all the stages of grief. You know, you get angry and I wanted to be this, you know.
Yeah.
But if you let go, then we can honestly find another better way just through coincidence.
And letting go, I struggled with that for a while too, letting go of what? And I think that letting go is letting go of everything, of your expectation of who you're going to, you know, the whole idea of like your life needs to be planned out by the time you're 18 or by the time you're 30, you need to have your, you know, everything. But now it's just a time of, no, there's just what I am right now. And I like when you say, am I okay right now? Because that's the only time that we ever live in. And that's, let me ask you about your theories on reincarnation, about where the soul comes from. Do you think it's we are these soul beings that are returning to Earth again and again?
Honestly, as a child, I believed that I had sent myself here on a somewhat of a doomed mission from the constellation of Pleiades. For some reason, I was completely attracted to that little seven sisters from childhood on. And I really felt deep in my heart and in my soul that I had chosen to come to planet Earth at this time from the Pleiades to help in the transition. And so this is like, you know, now my spiritual task. And yeah, I do honestly believe in the idea that we can carry on. Honestly, I'm certain the Bible even speaks of reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
It seems to have been edited slightly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I find that immensely fascinating, especially couple that with, you know, the idea. I do believe that the Rosicrucians also talk about this, but many of the Gnostic ministries also talk that our souls choose our parents and choose what time we're going to be born, and all of these things that we've been conditioned to not believe in. Because when you think, oh, I was just thrown into this life, I'm alive, I'm going to die, you know, I'm just a victim of, you know, my parents' fornication. And that's the mentality that most people have, which I think disempowers you completely. When you think, oh, no, I'm an immortal soul being, and my, you know, I go from planet to planet helping people, you know, to realize or wake up. And it... That makes much more sense, you know, that, oh, I chose, you know, my parents. I chose to have that sort of relationship, and because I knew it would lead me into, you know, this sort of understanding and have these experiences. And now seems to be the time where everyone is kind of coming awake and starting to think about those things.
Well, that's the next part of the puzzle, too, and that has a lot to do with the sun as well, I believe. You know, the one critical ingredient all these ancient societies venerate is the sun. And when we've started to put together pieces showing solar cycles coupling with world wars and massive warfare on massive solar cycle scales. And so we're finding this connection between us and the sun. So now if we have a second sun, or if we're entering into a new energetic field in space, say there's not even a second sun, but we definitely are entering an energetic field in space, then it's going to alter our consciousness. Now consider you're an elite brotherhood that's been passing your consciousness down through time, through beings, through ritual.
Mm.
Okay, so that's what keeps the plan running. That's why HW, knowing he would never live to see the New World Order, would still spend his entire existence making it come true. Not some grandiose scheme of his, not ego-driven. He's possessed.
Mm.
And when you start to realize that there is a possession that runs along the top of the elite guiding this thing, because that's the only answer that really rings true when you start to really look deep into it. And I'm now deep into studying these Egyptian Ennead, the Nine, and their connection to the elite. And I'm working on a new show about that. I don't have it. But anyway, so you start to look at the picture that way, you see the whole idea of what's going on, and then it redefines your soul force and your purpose and everything that will make you fully human. But then if you know these things like the ancients did, and you know these things throughout time, then you knew that the golden age was coming and that people were going to awaken. And so then, if you're aware of this, then you can make preparations as they're doing by hitting us with the chemtrails, getting us with aluminum and barium, feeding us all the crappy foods, the high fructose corn syrup, everything that they're doing to generate the very life force in humanity. Mm. And the same thing you were saying about taking out the natives, that's another major energetic force. And that's why they eradicate the natives, because the closer you are to the human or to the earth vibration, the more dangerous you are at this time. And they always wipe out the natives, and they wipe out the native plants, and they replace them with aggressive plants, and it's a full force scale attack, you know, on every vibrational level. And that's where we need to come in and feel that, feel the goosebumps, feel the love, feel the vibe of living, and go and do it. Go live. And forget all this other stuff, because none of it matters.
And, you know, I noticed that a lot of people have these same feelings, but they're ashamed to think of it. And then when they see you coming along and you know, like, I don't know, maybe you're like me and you got dreadlocks, or you look like a punk rocker and you got tattoos, and you're like, yo, man, these trees are vibrating really cool right now, or like I can really feel, you know, the energy. People start to say, yeah, you know, I feel that too, but I always thought people would laugh at me if I said anything. And a lot of people still do laugh, but I think it's very important to be open and expressive about these concepts and ideas to unlock other people who are feeling repressed but having those same awakenings within themselves.
Yes. Yes. You definitely need to, you know, coax it along and allow it to happen. You know, don't make a big deal out of it when your friends actually come around, you know. Just let them go. You've planted the seed, and when you see it come around, don't be egoistic and say, oh, you know, look, aha, you're doing what I said, oh, you know, just let them be, because they're where they need to be. I honestly have been a minister of the Celestine Prophecies by James Redfield for, well, since 1996. Mm. And honestly, I think if everyone read this book and took it to heart and practiced the insights, that they would then find this realm that we're discussing. But what I noticed is, back in 96, if you asked just random people, hey, what insight are you on? Mm-hmm. They would know what you're talking about. Everybody was into this. It really made a massive strike in the vibrations of everything and people's understandings. But what people would always say, if you asked them, you know, what insight you're on, they're like, well, I'm kind of stuck on the third. And the third is this believing in your imagination. The third is sitting and meditating with a plant, seeing its auric field. And people would say, well, I think I see the auric field, but it just could be a play of light, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't want to believe their own imagination. And that's where we lose our magical power. And that's what we're conditioned to believe at this point. And it's been engineered in us so many ways. If you look back at the Nazis and Walt Disney, Walt Disney put out a film for wartime propaganda all about how to create a Nazi. I can never remember the name of the title. How to Make a Killer, something of that effect. And or Education of Death is what it was called.
Disney,
and you would see that they... Huh?
Walt Disney put out a video called Education of Death?
Oh, yeah, How to Make a Nazi. There was a major campaign back in the 1940s when they took over the Disney studios. But, of course, Disney was hired by the FBI. He was a high-level Mason. He was involved. Well, he was demilay, but he was definitely deep into this this military-industrial complex. If you look into Disney, then you'll realize that's all it is. You'll see him hanging out with Wernher von Braun, an SS officer who said asteroids and then aliens were going to be taking out planet Earth, but it was all just a show for the elite to take over. And you find that Disney puts out this concept, and what they were showing was that here's a little schoolboy, and he's in a Nazi classroom, and they show a wolf eating a little bunny, and the boy feels bad for the bunny, and so they put him in a dunce cap, and he sits in the corner embarrassed. And therefore, then, you know, he changes. He goes in and becomes a killer, and he's happy that the wolf now eats the bunny. And it's that embarrassment that they've been using, and you'll see that so much right now. The poor children of today have been hardened so much that they're not willing to explore any concepts outside the norm, and they don't want to look foolish. And this has been a major tactic of the elite. We can walk away at any moment. you know, why we don't share more, why there's not more block parties, or why I don't
terrified.
Know my neighbors.
We're scared.
They're terrified.
We're scared that the neighbor is a serial killer and walking down our own, you know, keep your eyes down because someone might grab you and rape you and eat you. And, they're
exactly.
everywhere.
The
they're
false
everywhere.
Paradigm that's programmed through television. I mean, that paradigm does not exist. It's not out there. People are loving, caring, nurturing beings, and they always have been. They take care of little puppies and kittens and birds, and they stroke things, and they love things. And never once has someone ever come up and jumped you in the grocery store, you know, trying to take your groceries from you. And it's not that we're under some massive control. It's because humans love, and we're one of the major loving species on the planet.
Right. So, it does seem that we are in some sort of zoo, or it does feel like we are some sort of cattle being, you know, but in a way that we can't really comprehend. And there are, you know, the farm owners above us, you know, giving us a little bit of health care here and there and telling us what to do and what pasture to feed in now. And especially if you look back through the centuries, you know, oh, come to America now, okay, go to the West now, okay, you know, this is where you should set up your farms. Well, and now we're being, now that we're all established in our little groves, now what we should believe and what we should wear, what we should, you know, spiritually imbue. And I really do think it's because of this battle of good and evil that there are these, that humans are basically these light generating I don't know, yeah, pure creatures that are being fed off of our energy. Just when you get these pure beings to feel hate and lust and fear, it just generates such a well, like the Hindus talk about, that egg of your auric field becomes cracked and you leak your energy, and then so there's this being that is living off of that energy and psychically getting you to feel more fear. And each person has it. The Muslims also talk about this too, that every man is born with a jinn or a genie or a dark angel that influences them in the negative way. And I think this is being amplified, of course, if there is this dark force and we do have our elite working with them. It's being amplified through chemtrails and through HARP and through all of, you know, cell phones and all this electromagnetic frequency, because they claim to be ignorant of these things, but I it really does seem that they know exactly what they're doing. And I even heard that it inhibits your ability to travel out of body, and all of these things that we used to be able to do so naturally are just even in the way the streets are patterned, that we are in a prison for the soul. So it seems. And the work of breaking free is just daunting, but you seem to be confident that we can do it.
Yes, I have a lot of faith in humanity. I really do, because I've met so many. You know, I'm a people person, and I've been around, and so I do have a lot of faith in people if they could find the right guidance. Of course, everybody's just on autopilot, so no one's really trying. They're just coasting along, which is horrible, and what a waste of an existence. But, yeah, we were born into captivity, and it is very hard to see the bars because they were there before we were born. You know, we even have genetic memory keeping us bound down over the thousands of years that we've been captive. And so it will take a lot, and unfortunately it does often, as we were saying, take a bit of anxiety to cut people loose. So these catastrophes aren't really something to be so worried about, because it will actually bring out the best in people. My message to everyone always is, can't we do this now before the catastrophe? But people aren't ready to give up. They're not ready to cut the sale, and that's what scares them, and it's all that anxiety of the future. But yeah, I have faith in us, and I see more in humans than what the TV and the media are producing to say what we are, and we'll do it.
Well, I definitely appreciate the positive outlook. It's all very fascinating to listen to your stories, and it's been such a great honor to be able to talk with you. I don't know how much more time you had. I had so many other things I wanted to talk about with Sirius and JPL, but really, I think we've covered a lot today.
Yeah, let's do another one sometime soon.
Well, that would be fantastic. What, again, is your current website?
FreemanTV.com.
And I highly recommend going and checking out everything. It's so fascinating, and it really pushes the boundaries, especially like the Michael Jackson bust and the possible time loop that you know we've entered in. And there's just so many interesting things out there to research and explore, and I definitely wanted to thank you in person for opening my eyes to a lot of those things, and it's been great chatting with you today.
Thank you, Tom, and I'm glad that you followed the rabbit hole.
Absolutely.